A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 62. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Century Falls. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. So yes, we're continuing to talk about Century Falls, an interesting show from the BBC, broadcast in 1993 as a 6-part serial on children's BBC television. And interestingly, written by Russell T. Davies, who's since gone on to fame with the new Doctor Who. And so last time we were discussing some of the elements of the story, and we're going to carry on with that now and fill you in a bit more of the details of Century Falls and what's happening to our characters.
That's right. We already talked about Century Falls, the village that the main characters arrive in at the beginning of the story. And one of the two teenage twins, Ben Naismith, has some telepathic powers and maybe even psychic elements of some sort. The telepathic powers and psychic powers, or powers of reaching through time in certain ways, sort of blend together in this particular serial. And we start to get the impression that Ben Naismith, this sort of nasty and unbounded teenage boy, is important, that the things that he does will have a real impact. And we also start hearing more about the incidents of 40 years earlier, 1953, what happened in what they called the temple, where there is this horrible fire that burned many people, and many people died in it. It seems like even the stone of this temple was burned. So there are strange things that were happening then, and strange things happening now in 1993, the present of this story, when the serial was made.
Yes, as you say, there's strange things happening now, because we've got our three teenage characters, Tess, Hunter, and then Ben and Kerry, the twins, and they're sort of sneaking around the village. Ben's got some form of powers, but we find out that the villagers have also seemed to have some form of power of their own, or some sort of mental abilities. They seem to be able to see things, but they only seem to be able to do this when they act together as a group for most of the time. So they have to come together as some form of group mind. And as we've said, most of the villagers are fairly elderly now, because there's been no children born for 40 years in this village. And so it's quite interesting. We have these older characters, and when they come together, they can see things and they know things are happening. And it gets quite sort of eerie and spooky. And we're quite sort of tense, because something is certainly going on. And we find also, we start to learn a little bit more about the name of the village, and that Century Falls may not just refer to the waterfall outside the village, but that the word century may refer to some person or some entity that was thought long gone, but had some sort of power over the villagers. So it's very mysterious.
There are some strange elements in here, and some things that, as you say, we really don't understand. And we start wondering about the significance of things and what role Ben and Kerry, the two teenage twins, have to play. And is Tess really just an outsider who has nothing to do with this whole situation? Or does she somehow have a part to play in things as well?
And then on top of that, we also get some rather neat reversals, which we can't really give away because of spoilers. But I think we can say that certain characters who we thought were quite powerful turn out to perhaps be not so powerful as they thought they were, or we thought they were. And other characters who seemed quite minor become much more important as the series goes on. And that was handled quite well.
Yes, the way this show used its characters was, I would say, quite unconventional. It did things where you didn't always have a hero. It was more of an ensemble thing with several people acting as the hero at different times, and you didn't always quite have a villain, or you weren't sure who the villain was. And even when maybe you know who the villain is, it's a little more gray and blurred and unclear than just being a villain. There's something a little more complicated than that, and that is part of this idea that there were some themes that were a little more mature that Russell T. Davies was able to include, even though this was a children's program.
Absolutely, yes. Interesting themes that he brought in. And it brings us neatly on to talk about Russell T. Davies himself, who has since gone on to be, dare I say it, almost the saviour of British science fiction television. But at the time, he'd been making his name on children's television. And I think he initially started as a producer before going on to write. I think he was producing a children's medical drama called Children's Ward. And then he was writing some pieces for Saturday morning television shows and working, I think, in other bits and pieces of children's TV.
I think his first sort of more major project that was really his project, that he was the main person behind it, was Dark Season, which we mentioned in the previous episode. This was a 1991 children's sci-fi drama. It was like a little serial. It ran six episodes with two stories, and it was a neat little show, not as ambitious as Century Falls, for sure, but it was definitely a big step in doing something that was a sort of larger self-contained project on the BBC, which I think was intended to be more of an ongoing series. But it was an interesting little self-contained show.
Yes, I mean, you know, as you say, we will talk about that at some point as well. But fascinating little moments for children's television from RTD.
And then not long after that, Russell T. Davies moved to Granada Television, an independent TV company in the UK, as a staff writer. So he was no longer with the BBC. He was on the independent or commercial side of things. It was actually a freelance job that he was offered by the BBC to write Century Falls.
But as you say, he was then sort of moving away from the BBC for a while because he was working for independent television. And that's where he would go on, I think, really to break through into the big time. And he would write, in particular, he would write and produce a series called Queer as Folk, which was a really sort of groundbreaking TV drama. And I think probably the sort of first mainstream British television show that was set in and all around sort of the gay community in Manchester, and was a very sort of successful and critically acclaimed show, quite influential. And I think that's what really made Russell T. Davies's name in sort of, I suppose, grown-up television, moving away from children's TV.
Yes, that was definitely a big deal to do a series that was as high profile as that and as acclaimed as that.
Absolutely. And he would go on to work on another couple of series. He produced a series called The Second Coming, which starred Christopher Eccleston, who of course would go on to play the Ninth Doctor. And he also wrote a TV series called Casanova, which would star David Tennant. So he was obviously sort of forming relationships with some of the actors he would later work with on Doctor Who.
And he was also a longtime fan of Doctor Who, the classic series. It was reported in a number of places, I think, that he would only return to the BBC if he could revive Doctor Who. And originally, it looked like that might happen in 1999, but that fell through because of another TV movie. Things didn't work out there. It was a little while after that Douglas Adams actually tried to revive Doctor Who on the BBC. That probably fell through because Douglas Adams died not long after. But in 2003, it was announced that Doctor Who was coming back. There would be a new Doctor Who series on the BBC, and it was launched in 2005 with Russell T. Davies as producer and head writer.
And I think we have to say, and I mean, I'm sure everybody would agree, that it was almost an instant success. It was just an instant hit. bringing back Doctor Who, which had been off our screens for 16 years at that point, Brian?
With the exception of the American TV movie from 96, that's correct.
That's right, yeah. So it'd been off the BBC for 16 years. And then bringing it back with Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor, and tremendously successful, and has just gone on, you know, after that with David Tennant, to become just about one of the BBC's most successful shows. Incredibly popular with all ages. And I think, you know, it must be a huge hit for the BBC in terms of worldwide sales and in merchandising. And of course, it's also, I think, to a certain extent, it's revived British science fiction television, because there's been knock-on effects with other shows that have spun out of it, not least Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures and so on. So it's really had quite a huge effect, hasn't it, Brian?
Yes, and I think some of the other sci-fi shows that are on out of Britain now are more successful and more able to move forward with the types of plans they have because Doctor Who is there showing that sci-fi is big, or at least sci-fi can be big. And it's easy for us, after four seasons of the new Doctor Who and some specials after that, to say that Doctor Who is a really big thing and it was this big hit. But when it was announced to come back, and it was going to come back, but it hadn't actually been screened yet, it was not clear that that was going to be the case. In fact, when the BBC said they were doing it and pitched for international broadcasters, my understanding is there were almost no international broadcasters, with the exception of the CBC in Canada and maybe one or two others. Almost no one signed on to broadcast Doctor Who before it actually came out. There was no American broadcaster or cable channel that was interested in broadcasting it. So it looked like in 2005, the only official distribution of the new Doctor Who in the States would be on DVD.
Right.
Once it was actually broadcast, it became a big hit very quickly, and all of these international broadcasting deals fell into place in countries around the world, and it rapidly became a big deal everywhere, not just in Britain.
So it was a bit of a gamble, but it paid off big.
That's right.
And as you say, it's the success of Doctor Who has influenced many other different shows, and we've almost got that situation that we've described previously on British Invaders from the 1970s in particular, when other television companies are almost looking for their own rival to Doctor Who. They're looking for a science fiction, probably a family-based action drama that they can try and market some of the success that Doctor Who has received.
One could argue that Primeval, with its time travel and its action-adventure style, is intended for just that.
I think so, yes. I think you'd be right to argue that, yeah. But of course, RTD's stint as the main showrunner and producer and lead writer for Doctor Who is coming to an end. And as we record in, we are getting close to the end of 2009 when he will leave the show along with David Tennant. And where he will go next and what projects he's got lined up for the future, I don't think we know yet. But it's going to be very interesting.
He is leaving Doctor Who in good hands with Stephen Moffat taking over. We know that he has done a lot of very good work both on and off of Doctor Who. But where RTD will be going and what he'll be doing next, we really don't know.
He does leave an incredibly successful show, though, that he's turned into one of the biggest things on the BBC at the moment.
Absolutely.
How comes you know so much about it?
It's one of the few things in Century 4 that Dad ever talked about. He did it on purpose, warning us off.
Father never understood children. Warnings only draw them closer. Let's get closer still.
Ben, you're burning.
See it, Tess.
What?
Both of you. I'll show you. Take my hand.
Get off!
Take my hand.
So as we've been talking about the story of Century Falls, we may not be alone in thinking this. You may have noticed some similarities to a show that we've previously discussed on British invaders. And certainly it's something that struck us as we were watching it, Brian.
Yes, there's this idea that Century Falls and Children of the Stones are a little bit similar, and that are maybe even more than a little bit similar. This is something that you and I, Eamon, noticed independently, and I believe it's been talked about elsewhere as well. Both of them start with a parent and child, sort of two-person family, arriving in a sort of strange, sinister village as outsiders, and being sort of a focus, discovering what's happening there. Both learn about this mysterious, powerful figure at the manor house, who may be controlling an enormous amount or may not, we don't know. This was Hendrick in Children of the Stones, and it was Richard Naismith in Century Falls.
And then on top of that, we have teenagers with some form of psychic power. We've got this sort of strange feeling of menace and suspense that's going on in the village. And we've also got, in both series, we've got this strange and rather dark secret that lies in the past of the village, which people may or may not want to talk about, and the teenagers will find out more about as the series goes along. So there are these sort of little themes that they share, Brian.
Yes, there are these sort of different things that are kind of similar. Apparently, we're told the first draft of Century Falls actually had a stone circle in it, and ley lines, in addition to the waterfall. And those three were all the locations of power and the things in this village that had power. Of course, ley lines and the stone circle were both important elements of Children of the Stones. And they've been used in other things as well. The 1979 Quatermass serial, for example. Now, the final draft of Century Falls, what we actually saw on screen, does not have the stone circle or ley lines. It has the waterfall as the main sort of point of power, and potentially also the temple as a second point of power, or a related thing. So it did fortunately change in that way. And there really are some similarities here, but I think we also have to say there's also some quite original stuff in Century Falls, and it's not just a retread. It does some things that are quite good in it.
Yes, I think so. I mean, as you say, it's got quite a lot of original content, and I think it's just that we noted there were a few similar themes to the two shows, but it doesn't detract from Century Falls, which has got a lot to recommend it.
That's right, and I think that leads us neatly into our own thoughts about what we thought were the ups and downs, what was good and bad about this serial. So, Eamon, what did you think?
Well, we've mentioned the location shooting and the fact that there are no wobbly sets. It's all filmed in and around these villages. And the locations they found for the waterfall and for the village itself and the manor house, they all work really well. And although they don't quite carry off the summer theme, in a way, the sort of wintry look to it and the fact that people are wrapped up in heavy coats sort of tends to add to the sort of tension and drama, I think. So that worked well for me.
Yeah, I think those things did work well. Some of the effects that were used subtly actually worked pretty well. There were some scenes with the older characters that were in a sort of telepathic exploration or mental exploration, which had lots of interesting panning techniques and sort of crossfades from one face to another and sort of merging things that were done with very simple effects like superimpositions and crossfades that were really very effective. And that was something that I liked seeing in there.
Yeah. And the fire on the water is done particularly well, isn't it? The sort of mysterious fire that they see at the waterfall. As you say, they've done a sort of less is more approach to special effects. There's very few. They use them quite sparingly, and as a result, they work quite well. So it's good stuff.
Yes, that's right. They also had this very good incidental music score that worked really well to help give things this sort of spooky feel to it, which I think was very good.
Yeah, it is. It's another piece of spooky music. It's thankfully, from my point of view, it's not quite as terrifying as the music to Children of the Stones.
Indeed.
I can bear to listen to this music. But yeah, no, that's well done. And I think fairly typically for a Russell T. Davis script, we've got some very interesting ideas and we've got some very non-conventional sort of leading characters. We've mentioned Tess Hunter and the fact that there is comment made about her weight. But as you said in the last episode, Brian, it's handled very well. And it's unusual to have a leading character who, you know, does appear to be not the typically good-looking child actor. And it's part of the sort of theme of the program. So that was done quite well.
Yeah, the idea of her struggling with her weight issues was interesting. The themes in this were really well written and well used. I quite like that.
There's a lot of very powerful women in this series. Quite a number of the male characters are perhaps less powerful than some of the women in the village, I suppose the possible exception of Ben, who is obviously got his own special powers, as we learn.
Yes, I thought the performances in this, for the most part, were quite good. There were a couple of them that were a little weak from time to time. Carrie was sort of hit and miss. I think she was probably the most challenging role of the three teenagers because she had the least to do. Or the least interesting type of character. But at times her character did work quite well, and generally the performances in this were quite solid, I thought.
Yeah, they're not too bad. I mean, as you say, there are moments when you see child actors just doing drama school stuff, and then there are other moments when they're much, you know, much more convincing. As you say, I mean, Tess is good. Ben gets to be nasty to people, so that's quite, I think, quite helpful, but his sister, Carrie, as you say, has less to do, and so it's a bit harder for her, I think.
Yeah, I think those were reasonably good, but having some of these older actors giving some very strong performances helped bring it up that level. When you have Esme Harkness, especially, but also her sister, May, and some of the other elderly men and women, and of course you have Bernard Kay as Richard Naismith, you have some strong performances here that are really neat.
I think, you know, having said so much about RTD's script and his ideas, I think we have to say that in some places the dialogue that he wrote was a little bit perhaps stilted, and maybe it's a reflection on the production being somewhat rushed and that he was called in at fairly short notice to write this story when an earlier script was found, you know, not to be suitable. So there are a few moments where it's a bit strange, aren't there, Brian?
I think that's right. There are some. The writing in general is pretty good. You know, I like the way that it's plotted and the thematic things very much.
And as we've said, it's a series with some interesting ideas, and it's an interesting script from Russell T. Davis. It's almost like it was produced at short notice as a fairly sort of run-of-the-mill filler slot children's television drama, and yet managed to become something more than that because of the people involved.
I think that's fair. I think we've talked about a lot of the positives, and this is certainly very good. I think as far as the weaknesses of this, we're talking about some of the acting and some of the dialogue, and sort of a little bit here and there, the production was a little rushed, so there were some spots here and there that just was not brought off quite as well as it should have been.
Yeah, there were some hit-and-miss moments, as there were in Children of the Stones as well. So there are a few moments where, as you say, the acting makes us wince, or some of the dialogue is not quite so good. But lots of interesting stuff to recommend it.
Yeah, it has lots to say for it. So let's talk about the availability of this. If you want to get a hold of Century Falls, how would you go about it?
Well, it got a Region 2 DVD release in 2006, probably, I should imagine, to tie in with the success of the new Doctor Who and the interest in Russell T. Davis and his work. It's just the episodes. There's no special features, so just the 6 episodes. It does come with a viewing notes booklet, which I haven't seen myself, but you have, Brian.
Yes, I have.
And I believe it carries the usual British Invaders warning that the notes, the booklet does contain some spoilers.
Oh, yes.
Probably watch the show before you read the booklet. Now, you can get that on Amazon, although it's currently looking as if it might be out of stock, but it was available up until quite recently for just £7 on Amazon here in the UK. But it's certainly, there's lots of copies available on Amazon Marketplace at the moment, both new and used. So reasonably easy to get hold of. And it's also available on the rental sites here in the UK, which is where I got hold of a copy to look at.
Yes, certainly pretty easy to get a hold of it in the UK. They actually did these DVD releases in 2006 of Century Falls and Dark City simultaneously. And they were very definitely being marketed as other work by Russell T. Davies, who was producing Doctor Who. So in Region 1, there is no release.
None at all.
That's right. As far as we can tell, this was originally broadcast in 1993 and put out on this DVD release in 2006, and there were no other releases or broadcasts or official distribution of any kind. No foreign broadcasts, no repeats.
Okay, so you have to get hold of a copy from Region 2 if you want to watch it elsewhere in the world.
That's right.
So our recommendations, having told you how you can get hold of a copy if you're interested, should you get hold of a copy? Brian, what are you going to say?
I would say yes. This is a really interesting serial. It is a good, spooky watch, and it brings in some innovative ideas and some of the scariness for kids' TV that we didn't have that much of in the 1990s. And there was actually very little in the way of British sci-fi TV being produced in the early 1990s. So this is something that is pretty unusual. There is not much else that's like it from that time. So I would say it's definitely worth checking out.
Okay. I think it's very good as well. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff, and it's good to see this early piece of Russell T. Davies now that we've come to know his work better. I don't think it's quite as good as Children of the Stones, which is still one of the standout series that we've covered. So if you haven't seen Children of the Stones, I'd perhaps suggest you go and look at that first. But if you watched that and enjoyed it and are looking for something along similar lines, perhaps, with lots of interesting ideas and some creepy, scary moments, then check out Century Falls. It is worth looking at.
I would agree with that. Children of the Stones was a better serial than this one was. But if you're more interested in something that's a little more recent than the 1970s, that's a 1990s show, this is a good one to look at for sure. And yeah, definitely after you've seen Children of the Stones and digested that for a while, this is a good one to follow up with.
And if you do check it out, please let us know what you thought. And if you've seen both Children of the Stones and Century Falls, tell us what you think of the comparison between the two.
Absolutely. It would be very interesting to hear what some of you have to say about that. So, in summary, Century Falls was a 1993 BBC TV serial that was about a strange, spooky village and three teenagers arriving in it and discovering that there are unusual, strange things happening here, and there appear to be elements of telepathy and perhaps psychic-type powers and strange things happening and people who are not clear what they're doing or where they're coming from and all sorts of hidden things to be revealed and many strange and spooky things happening.
It's a good spooky children's show from Russell T. Davies. Check it out.
Good stuff.
So next time on British Invaders, please join us when we will be discussing Gerry Anderson's Super Marionation classic, It's Time for Thunderbirds. And we'll be talking about that in our next two episodes.
And that is definitely a classic, getting into really well-known stuff there.
Absolutely.
You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com. And you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. Thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. Do let us know what you think. And until next time, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.